This is the 12 Songs of Christmas. Today, Alex talked to... This is the 12 Songs of Christmas. Today, Alex talks to Delicate Steve about his Christmas album titled The Christmas Album, and he and music writer David Dennis discuss Outkast's improbable Christmas song, Player's Ball. My name is Alex Rawls, and the 12 Songs of Christmas is part of my effort to get a handle on Christmas music, something I've collected for more than 20 years. I like the songs as songs, but the odd space they inhabit in our culture and in artists' careers intrigues me. I'm talking to musicians who try to work through some of these thoughts. Today I'm talking to Steve Marion, who performs as Delicate Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
So this Christmas season that Steve has released the Christmas album, which features him playing the Christmas Canon's greatest hits, on is that slide guitar, or what guitar are you playing on that?
Yeah, that's slide guitar.
Okay. With songs that often twinkle with sort of a gentle psychedelic beauty, or in the case of Frosty the Snowman, erupt into a distorted 14-minute guitar freakout. Delicate Steve has released three albums before this, starting in 2011 on Luwaka Bop, where the influences of indie rock bands were mistaken for world music. Now he's on Anti Records with a label where people have visions as sort of idiosyncratic as his own. So, Steve, what's your background with Christmas music growing up?
Nothing really out of the ordinary. Just would hear it everywhere I went growing up in New Jersey for a month or month and a half before Christmas, during the Christmas season. I don't really have many specific memories about what I was listening to, or as a kid or teenager, I definitely wasn't listening, like putting on any kind of Christmas music myself.
Sure.
Grew up going to mass and probably just for the first maybe 10 years of my life or something like that. And I think, looking back, I think I really like all of the really old hymns and stuff that they would do at Christmas Mass. And that probably stuck with me because the melodies are and the chord changes are really nice.
I want to come back to that because I think that's I think a really interesting thing to deal with. But I want to go back to to growing up. Did you actually have Christmas music in your house? Like, did your parents have any Christmas music?
Maybe like a CD they put on, nothing is really like ringing a bell. Like we wouldn't have any kind of tradition like that.
Sure.
Watch some Christmas movies on TV, that kind of thing. But it wasn't like, all right, let's put this on.
Now, I'll tell you why I ask, cause I'm interested, because my suspicion is that that's kind of most people's case. Like, I remember three records that were in our house because they seemed so random. We had an Anne Murray Christmas album, and I don't know that anybody in the house really cared about Anne Murray, but somehow we had this. And then we had Mitch Miller. There used to be a sing along with Mitch. And so it was basically, I think my mom bought it because I think she had thought, it'd be good for us. We'd all like sort of singing the songs. And so that's the Christmas music that actually made it into the house. And so otherwise, I think my experience, and probably like yours, is we really did largely hear Christmas music kind of as just the wallpaper of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember trying to, like, download Beach Boys, I think, and the Ronettes or the Phil Spector thing. When I started downloading music, and I didn't really like Phil Spector. I remember not liking any of the few records that I sought after, for Christmas records when I finally was old enough to download music or and check out stuff and be like, oh, let me see this. And so, yeah, I never really, there was never any kind of Christmas music I was that into growing up.
Well, also, what age are you talking about?
I don't know, probably like 16, 17, something like that. Sure. When I was just absorbing all kinds of music. And then, you know, for some reason I decided to check out like the Beach Boys Christmas album. I don't think I really gave it a big listen, but I think I just remember kind of feeling like maybe Christmas music is not really doing it for me, and I'd rather just listen to like the Beach Boys, you know, original music.
Right.
So that was kind of the feeling I think I had when I gave it a chance, like myself, to check out some stuff. But I didn't really look too hard.
Right. Did you not care for the Phil Spector record, or was it an issue with Phil Spector?
I wasn't really that into like, I mean, there, you know, like the actual Ronettes stuff and a lot of stuff he did that I really like, but a lot of this, you know, I didn't like his style of production for a while. So it was just kind of like, oh yeah, this is the Phil Spector Christmas thing. I don't know, something about hearing like the cover songs. I mean, I probably checked it out once when I was like 16, so I don't even really remember what I'm talking about, but it took me a while to get into his production style beyond just like the old, you know, Ronettes hits and stuff like that. Sure. I didn't really even like All Things Must Pass until recently, a couple of years ago.
What would you be listening to at that time? What were the records that did turn your crank?
Well, like everything, because I was just like a child of Napster time.
Right.
And so I would just go on, you know, allmusic.com or something and look up an artist that I already knew of and then, you know, download three more records of theirs. And so I was getting into like, it was my whole musical world was expanding just kind of from every side and every direction. So like, that's kind of where I heard everything all at once in a way.
I asked this is, you know, I think about my own teenage years, at a time when I really wasn't very interested in Christmas music either. And my theory is just, you know, so much of what we listen to when we're teenagers is music that starts to draw the line between where mom and dad leave off and where we start. Mm. And, you know, like, the, you know, it was a very good day when I discovered that Pink Floyd made my mom very nervous. Like she heard it like, can you turn that down? That is making me nervous. And and we had a good relationship, but it just was, there was a moment of like realizing I had a piece of music that was mine and that could not be hers. And you know, and I think about so much teenage listening as being a part of both drawing that line and starting to find the people, you know, the people who I shared something with, other than just blood. And so, you know, at that time, Christmas music seemed pretty corny to me too. And, and so I kind of wonder if part of that is just a function, you know, just a function of age, and that at that time, almost anything that didn't come right in your wheelhouse would have seemed deficient.
I'm not exactly sure how my brain was working back then, but yeah. guess you could say that.
Yeah. When did you start to become more interested in Christmas music?
I'm almost not interested.
Oh, really?
In it. Yeah. I basically how this whole album came to be was I made a new record that's going to come out sometime next year. And I made that pretty quickly this year, in the spring. And I'm not, able to do the Kanye West thing and just put it out right away, which I always want to do after I make a record. So just realizing that, it was going to take a really long time for it to see the light of day. I was trying to think of other things I could do to keep myself busy or just to have something else to really focus on. And, I was talking with a friend of mine, Michael Azarod. He's a music writer who lives in New York. And we just met up to catch up, and I was telling him about this, and he basically said, why don't you make a Christmas album? And, people had told me to do that, in the past, but it never really felt like it made any kind of sense. And, I just thought about it at the time. And, I think I had a call with, Andy, who runs Anti Records, maybe a couple of days after my meeting with Michael. And he actually suggested the same thing, just kind of independent of my meeting with Michael. And so then I decided, yeah, let me make a Christmas record. That's basically how this whole thing came to be for me.
Oh, cool. Okay, well, let's come back to some of that in just a few minutes here, but let's also hear part of it. This is from the Christmas album. This is Delicate Steve's version of Away in a Manger. Before the song, we were talking about the sort of quick way and sort of conversational way this whole project came about. On this, your guitar is front and center in a way even more so than it is on your other records. Is that a byproduct of the informal way you made the record, or how did that come to be?
I don't know. I tend to think that it's mostly sitting in the same place as my other records, more or less, which is just where it would be mixed as a singer. As far as how all of these arrangements came to be, a lot of them were done just pretty in the moment with a drummer named Joe Russo and bass player named Dave Drywitz, who are both incredible musicians that I've got to see over the years and play with every now and then in various projects. And so this was the first record that I did with any for Delicate Steve with anybody else playing any of the instruments. And so I got together with those guys for 2 days in June, July, on some of the hottest days of the year, and in this recording studio that Joe has in Brooklyn. And we had 2 days to basically cut the record, and we'd pick a tune and go in there and, you know, just have fun with it. And so all of the stuff, guitar, bass, and drums is all recorded live together. And then we did some overdubs, and Away in a Manger was one where I think it was like the first song we cut, and then we kept going and did the rest of the record, and then sort of came back to that one and another one after we got into a better flow. And at first it almost had like this Velvet Underground sort of heroin weird feel to it, but I didn't want to do anything that felt contrived. Not to say that did, but it just didn't really feel that natural for us. And so all the music and how the arrangements came to be are all just because these guys are great players, and we all, I think, have an appreciation for different styles of music. And so we can do something that kind of sounds maybe more like a Shangri-La's song on Away in a Manger, and then, you know, maybe like a Bill Frisell thing on Silver Bells, or it all came to be very naturally without a lot of thought.
Right. You had 2 days. Was that a self-imposed limit? Was that why sort of the brief time?
Well, I didn't want to overthink it, and you know, just with budgets and stuff, I'm not in the position where I could, you know, spend a whole lot of time in a recording studio, and I don't think that would do me much good or do me any better than going in and just committing and getting that side of yourself on a recording. So 2 days felt like enough, and also those guys are really busy and have busy schedules. So we did 2 days, and then everybody else that was on the record, Marco Benevento on keys and organ, and Kelly Pratt on horns and flute, and Dan Aid on pedal steel, and then Joe on some more percussion. They all just did their overdubs in their own studios and then sent me the files.
Okay. If you don't mind, why did Michael and Andy think a Christmas album was a good idea for you?
I don't know. I mean, Michael knows me pretty well. And, you know, I forget exactly why or if they had any like specific reasons other than they wanted to hear it. I think Andy had some reasons from the label point of view, as, you know, it's always a good thing. And, you know, every year you can, you know, turn more people onto it. I wanted to do it because, to me, it doesn't really feel that pretentious of a thing to do. And, you know, I'm a sincere person, and didn't feel like I was trying to put a spin on any of the music, and I felt like I was able to get into the headspace to just do faithful versions of these songs. And I like the idea of, you know, all my friends getting a chance to listen to this album around Christmas time and during the holidays, which is sort of like a weird in between time where it doesn't really exist, but everyone, it sort of like is its own thing. I don't know how to define that period of the year, but I everything about it to me felt really good to do, and to do versions that weren't, you know, obviously like ironic or goofy or trying to reinvent anything. And just especially with the musicians that I had on the record, I mean, these guys are just players and they play music all the time, and it just felt fun to get in a room and not have to really worry about creating the song. And it's just, we could show our personalities in the music that's already been created. And I was really excited to do it. Also, I think Bob Dylan's like the previous or most recent two records with the Sinatra Standards, Shadows in the Night and Triplicate, were kind of big influences, I feel like, also in this Christmas album.
How so?
Because just, you know, he was just trying to pay his respects to these songs that, you know, have always been a part of his life and try to reinvent the wheel. And I think on paper, the idea of Bob Dylan singing Frank Sinatra, you go in thinking it's going to be something, you know, like that there's a catch to it or something like that, because he's Bob Dylan and he's trying to sing Frank Sinatra songs, but then you realize he's just, you know, doing these songs justice and sort of making, modernizing a lot of them and making them his own versions, which, is just really cool to hear. And the band behind him sounds just kind of, sort of meek, but also very supportive. And it's just a cool mood. It's a cool atmosphere. And, Bob Dylan's always an inspiration. So yeah, that was sort of what I needed as like a reference point to like not try to go in and reinvent the songs and just play the music and let it sort of play itself in a way.
It's interesting that you picked Dylan's Sinatra records, but not Dylan's Christmas record.
Yeah, I don't really know that one that well. I've probably heard, you know, 3 or 4 songs off it. You know, to be honest, I know there are millions of billions of Christmas records, and, you know, especially of big artists or artists that I like have made those kind of records. And I don't know, it always takes me so long to hear any kind of music. So, I mean, it's the same with Christmas music. I'm not like getting around to Christmas time and saying like, I want to hear like a new Christmas album that I haven't heard before, or like Bob Dylan's Christmas album. I want to check that out. It's kind of like, I feel like with those kind of records and probably with my record, you maybe hear it when it comes out and then you know, sort of create that memory and then you can return to it. But since there's so much Christmas music and so much music all the time, it's really hard to like, find a place with a piece of music that's already existed unless somebody puts it on for you or like, you know, hey, check this out. And so, yeah, that's probably mostly why I haven't heard, Dylan's record, or I think I heard it. I remember whose house I was in. I was in a friend's house and he put it on maybe like 5 years ago. And that was the first and only time I heard it. I thought it was cool.
Well, let's get back to some music from the Christmas album and then we'll talk some more. This is the last track on the album, and we'll talk a bit about it. This is Frosty the Snowman. What made you decide to do Frosty like that?
Yeah, this one was maybe the only one going in where I just had this idea where this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to make like a 27-minute version initially, and so basically I told these guys that I had this idea because they come from you know, more of the jam oriented music world, and you know, Joe plays drums with members of the Grateful Dead, and he's got his own Grateful Dead sort of a tribute band in a way. I don't know how you'd describe it, where he does his own take on Dead songs, and, you know, they'll sell out two nights at like Red Rocks. And Dave also comes from that world and also plays in the band Ween. He's the bass player of the band Ween, but plays all kinds of musical styles. But I know that these guys can just rip. And I also know that they do it more often than they play, you know, maybe some slow version of Silent Night like we did. So having got all the songs out of the way, and telling them, man, I really have this idea. We should do like a, you know, just make Frosty. Like it's a sort of cultural thing, like the Allman Brothers have Mountain Jam, or, you know, the Dead have all these great long epic jams. And I thought Frosty the Snowman was a cool story and a good metaphor for just life. And it made sense to expand on that and really electrify the song. And that was all of the mental conception behind it. But when it came down to it, it was like we had another 40 minutes left before Joe had to get to a gig and Dave had to drive back to New Jersey. And at the end of doing all the songs, I mean, I just literally started playing that guitar part how the song starts, and Joe pushed record. Yeah, I mean, you can almost hear it. It's like it sort of picks up. Like I started playing and he was like, hold on a second, and push record. And then that's just the first take of us, you know, jamming together. And so, yeah, it was an idea at first to make an epic, make Frosty the Snowman an epic musical jam, if you will. But it wouldn't have come to be if it didn't actually flow so naturally musically. And yeah, that's what you hear is the first take of us playing that song.
For me, Frosty is sort of the quintessential, you know, sort of kids' Christmas song, kind of even more than the Santa songs are. And so part of me loved sort of the tension or the taking sort of such a kid song and giving it that kind of muscle and weight and that kind of exploratory energy. Did you think at all about sort of how it sits as sort of as a children's song when you were approaching it?
I mean, I think I don't look at the song the same way, or I feel like, you know, maybe somebody wrote the lyrics and then said, let's turn this into a kid's song, is more how I think the original version went, because I mean, that's the only Christmas song that's sort of talking about the, you know, the idea of life and what it means to be alive. And, you know, you're only here for when your spirit is inhabiting these bodies that we all have, just like Frosty, you know, however you want to kind of relate that, with him putting on his little snow hat and becoming alive. And, you know, even as he's melting, I forget what the actual lyric is, but, you know, he's like melting away and he's still playing around and, just enjoying his life. And he's fully conscious of what it means to be alive, which is cool. And I mean, I guess it's, kids like, adult like, old person like, Zen like.
This interests me because one thing I wonder about with people who make instrumental music, and especially in this case where you're making instrumental music of songs that have lyrics, is how the lyrics factor into the way you think about a song. Now, sort of does the meaning that the writer wrote when they wrote the words, does that at some level disappear when the words disappear? And obviously in the case of Frosty, for you, it doesn't. In the case of like a number of the hymns that you do, do those songs in your mind remain spiritual even though nobody's singing those lyrics like A Silent Night?
I mean, I think I'm singing them. That's how I feel when I'm playing guitar. So, yeah. I it doesn't sound that way to other people, or it doesn't come, you know, people maybe hear the guitar, but in when I'm actually playing the guitar, I don't have that kind of like detached feeling of like, how will I play this on the guitar? It feels like I'm singing it.
Well, I think we're in a good place. So, Steve, thanks for the conversation.
Thank you.
Today I'm talking with David Dennis, Senior Culture Editor at Interactive One, and a friend from New Orleans, now in Atlanta. How are you doing, David?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing just fine. If you want to see David's writing, I recommend you follow him on Facebook, because he shows up in enough places that I can't rhyme them all off right now. But since he posts links to most of it and is very good about that, and actually gets a lot of good conversation online following it, that it's worth following. David Dennis? David Dennis Jr. On Facebook?
Yeah, David Dennis Jr. on Facebook should do the trick.
All right, cool. So today we're going to talk about Outkast's Player's Ball, song you brought to the table. What about Player's Ball makes it a song that, you know, in some way you want to talk about as a Christmas song?
So it's interesting. So Player's Ball was on a Christmas compilation. So Outkast was trying to, get their start. They needed a big single to sort of launch their careers. And so they ended up going on this, LaFace Christmas, Christmas compilation.
Yeah. LaFace Family Christmas.
Yeah. LaFace Family Christmas. So they wanted Outkast to make a Christmas song, which sounds, today it sounds like, oh, they could pull it off. Andre could sing something about Christmas and people would rap about it and make sense. But at the time, it did not make a lot of sense, because these were two down south rappers who rapped about Cadillacs, and, you know, they were still trying to find themselves, and, you know, they were in the gangster rap sort of, atmosphere. And so they decided that a straight up Christmas song would be corny, right? So they came up with Player's Ball, which is a song about, like pimps and players and grits and catfish and Southern lifestyle that really didn't have much to do about Christmas, but it ended up on the compilation and became like their first big single, and it really launched Outkast. So one of the reasons that it's such an interesting Christmas song is that it's not really a Christmas song, but it is a song that, you know, if it did not come together, we may not have Outkast.
Right. The one thing that, and actually let's start by hearing it, and this is, they now, before that, this is the version from the LaFace Family Christmas. This is 1993. They would eventually, when they first released Southern Playalistic Cadillac Music, that at that point they remade it and they changed the lyrics slightly to get the Christmas out of the song. Right. But this is the original, so we'll hear that and then we can get back to it.
Man, hear that, man.
You gonna pad?
Man, scene was so thick. Low rides, 77 Sevilles, L Dogs, them but them blacks. All the players, all the hustlers. I'm talking about a black man heaven here. You know what I'm saying?
It's beginning to look a lot like wood. Follow my every step. Take notes on how I crept. I'm about to go in depth. This is the way I greet my season. Here's my ghetto rep. I kept, to say the least, no, it can't cease. So I began to piece my two and two together. Got snowy weather. Have to find something to do better. Bet
I set some traps, so shut up that nonsense about some solid night. I got sick crock, if it ain't real, ain't right. I'm like, no matter what the season, forever chill with Smith. I sip my fifth, I chill with Weston, got my reason. So tell me, what did you expect? You thought I'd break my neck to help y'all deck the halls? Oh no, I got other means of celebrating. I'm getting blizzard at Hojo, I got the hoochie waiting. I made it through another year, can't ask for nothing much more. It's Outcast for the books, I thought you knew, so now you know, let's go.
How does that, you know, how does that lead to Outkast, or how does that, how does Outkast change from this?
So yeah, so that leads Outkast became a really the big single, the big song from the Christmas album, you right. know, and it became their first big single. And you think about the people who were on that album. I mean, I think what TLC was on the album.
Yep. Tony
Braxton. You know, a lot of. Tony Braxton, a lot of big 90s heavy hitters on the album, and this becomes the breakout song from these two guys nobody's ever heard of before, right? And so then they decided to shoot a video for it to make the lead single, and, you know, Diddy, Sean Combs, directs the video, right? And makes this real gritty Southern rap video. With Andre 3000, his shirt is off, you know, did he, and the there was a documentary on Organized Noise about this video and how Diddy wanted to make them, saw them as fashion icons and sex symbols and all this stuff very early on, right? So you see the vision for what Outkast is in this very early Christmas song, but also you see, you know, their creativity. You see how they decide to flip things on its head that they would do for the rest of their careers. You know, they decided to, all right, we have to fit this mold of a Christmas song. We have to do it in a very tangential way in order to keep our identities.
Right. And one of the things I think is that I was thinking about while listening to it was, well, very clearly, it's still at this point, they are working sort of on the Gangsta Access or sort of Axis. And, I chill with Smith, chill with Wesson. But at the same time, part of the thing I was kind of thinking about while listening to it and getting to look a lot like What and Shut Up With the Nonsense About Silent Night is it's referencing Christmas while clearly sort of backing away and then establishing its sort of alternative. And that idea of like here's a, you know, here's a celebration, Christmas. We got another way to go with this. And the idea of making your own thing. I was really fascinated by that. I think on one hand, I think it's part of what kind of has come to resonate for me with Christmas is the way that it's an occasion that people end up ultimately creating all their own things. You know, you create so many of your own celebrations, create your own rituals, your own traditions. But I liked in this time the idea of also proposing an entire alternative.
You know, like you think about mid-90s hip-hop, right? That goes against the idea of Christmas, right? Like being really happy and having a really nice childhood where you get a bunch of gifts in the morning sort of goes against the idea of what you are usually rapping about if you are talking about mid-90s, you know, hip-hop. You think about men accessing joyous emotions that, you know, offers a sort of vulnerability that a lot of artists don't have, especially early on. You think about, you know, maybe they make a different, more direct Christmas song 10 years into their careers. You know, like, they can do that once you've been established, but you have two guys who start off their careers talking about candy canes and new toys and Christmas and all stuff that boxes them into something that is not true to, that's not really good for a career. You know, you sure. end up, sure. you run the risk of being Will Smith, right? you know, instead of being Outkast, you know, like that's something that you have to, you know, that clearly is on their mind. And then going back to what you're saying about this is what black men think about. Like, you know, this is what the black experience in America is, that we don't necessarily get a ton of gifts, you know? Like, we don't get the, like, Christmas Story is a very white story, you know? Sure. Like, that's not necessarily what happens in a low-income housing in Atlanta, Georgia, right? Which is why it's interesting to hear the intro to the song with the way that they are talking about the scene was so thick and the cars and all that stuff. That is how, with that wonderment that a child has for gifts for Christmas. But they're talking about what their experience is and the people that they look up to. A lot of times in rap, you know, when you ask people to take a creative look at Christmas, they always say, what if Santa, there's a lot of songs about Santa Claus comes to the hood, right. You know, and that's how we think outside the box. But this thinks outside the box about the whole entire premise of Christmas and what is Christmas and what does it look like for gifts for us?
Sure.
Right. What does it look like for celebrations where we're from? And I think that's one of the reasons that this works so well, because it speaks to a whole lot of people in this country who say, like, I don't really get up for Christmas and get a ton of toys. But when I go to the cookout, or I go to the ball, or I go and see the nice cars, like, that's Christmas for me. And that's why, you know, that's why the song sort of works so well as a Christmas song, but also a song to launch, you know, to launch a career.
Well, another question I was thinking about when I was listening to it was, was this a thing that was already happening? And this was basically, they were saying, you know, yeah, Christmas is happening here, but the same day over here, this is happening. Or were they just kind of imagining the alternative? Do you have any thoughts on that? Well,
that's a good question. It seems as though, you know, I mean, it could all be happening at the same time. I mean, that's for, you know, a lot of that. You get to the heart of the idea of this sort of cliched idea of the spirit of Christmas, right? Of, oh, it's not about the gifts, it's about the people. And for a lot of time, a lot of folks don't get a ton of gifts, especially, it's about who's coming over.
Right.
Right. It's about who do you get to see? It's about who's cooking. It's about whose car is coming over, who's got the nice suits. Like, those are the real memories that you get, that you're supposed to get from Christmas. So in one instance, this is a very inspirational Christmas tale about what Christmas is all about. And that's about, you know, the folks you get to see and the family and the camaraderie that you get.
When I was, you know, 24 or so, 25, that friends and I would, on Christmas night, after we'd had a full day of family Christmas, we got together and played poker all night. And there was that sense of, at some point, you know, you're young, you know, you're part of a music culture, you're the stuff that interests you isn't necessarily defined by being and It's a Wonderful Life. And at some point, if you're going to be you, you want something a little different in that day. And so it's like that idea that completely resonated with me, where at the end, you know, the real time is the time with their friends, checking cars, checking out who's around, you know, and the sort of the all, you know, what is going on besides the family thing.
They were, you know, getting out of high school at the time when they're making this song. So there is that sort of young, that sort of transition that you're talking about, you know, when you're going from college or going from high school into your college years, or you're leaving that traditional, you know, if you do take that break from high school until you have your own family, that break between traditional Christmases almost, you know,
right.
Like you're trying to find new Christmas things to do, or you're not that into it, or you may go home, but you go find out some with your friends. So it's all about, like you said, those new young male traditions that you get before you sort of become, you know, revert back to this this happy-go-lucky Christmas person when kids start coming and stuff like that.
Right. So, well, David, I really appreciate the time and that's in the conversation. I think that I was really glad that you brought that one to my attention, because it's a song that I was always aware of, but I really hadn't hadn't stopped to think it through. And it was one of those where I would run across it And when I was thinking about making like mixes of Christmas songs, I kind of, it's like, if it doesn't jump to Christmas quickly, I kind of go, okay, next, keep moving. And so I really hadn't slowed down to spend some time chewing on it. And I really appreciate the time.
Okay, oh, yeah, thanks.
All right, talk to you later.
You know, niggas worldwide.
Thanks to David Dennis and Delicate Steve. If you want to talk about today's episode, you can find me at 12 Songs of Christmas on Facebook. If you enjoyed today's show, tell your friends and give us a review on Apple Podcasts. Help more people find out about us. My name is Alex Rawls, and I'll finish with one more from Delicate Steve's The Christmas Album. This is his version of Silver Bells. Talk to you again next week.